I was just gripping the side, like, I don't know if I can do this. And then my mom, the midwife, I get emotionally mad at the other assistant midwife. They were like, you've got this. You're doing it. And they're like over there at the door. You know, my midwife is closer, but they're like, you're doing this.
Welcome to the Happy Home Birth Podcast, your source for positive natural childbirth stories and your community of support, education, and encouragement in all things home birth and motherhood. How do we encourage optimal growth of our bodies and the bodies of our babies in pregnancy and birth? What are the foundational pieces to that? Hey there, happy home birthers, and welcome to this week's episode of the Happy Home Birth Podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Fusco, and this week we're speaking with Margaret Berry. After a history of restrictive dieting and over-exercising, Margaret decided to seek out a better understanding of physiology that goes beyond the unsustainable diets and quick fixes commonly promoted in the women's health world. And after successfully resolving her digestive issues and hormonal imbalances and healing her relationship with food and exercise, Margaret completed her functional nutritional therapy practitioner training in 2014 and immediately started working with clients. Her motherhood journey began with an intervention-heavy hospital birth of her daughter, after which she went on to have her second child, a son, at home, in a full circle redemption of her own autonomy. And over the years, she has continued to expand her knowledge base with a wide range of additional certifications, including HTMA, which is hair tissue mineral analysis, functional blood chemistry, fascia fitness, perinatal corrective exercise, and lymphatic exercise. Margaret specializes in mineral balancing, women's metabolic health, and fascia-focused exercise. And she is passionate about helping women feel strong, energetic, comfortable, and confident in their bodies. Margaret works with clients via her group programs, courses, and classes. And today, we're going to discuss Margaret's professional work as well as her birth stories. I cannot wait for you to hear this episode, so let's go ahead and dive in. Before we jump in, please remember that the opinions of my guest may not necessarily reflect my own and vice versa, and this show is not medical advice, it's an educational tool. So continue to take empowered responsibility for your health and your family. Margaret, I am so excited to have you. Thank you so much for coming on the Happy Home Birth Podcast.
Yes, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to it.
It's really exciting because, so for those who haven't heard me say this, I don't know, I think I've mentioned it, but Margaret and I were at the CFT training together back in March. It was so funny because we have this training going on, and at the beginning we're talking like, oh, how did you hear about this? How did you hear about it? Almost everybody in the room heard about the CFT training in Greenville from the one and only Margaret Berry. So I realized I have to be really, really appreciative of you for making my life a lot easier. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, it was so cool to know that stuff that I had shared about it, or, you know, that I've been learning about it, learning about the craniosacral-fascial therapy. It's just so cool that people actually took that and ran with it and were like, yes, let's learn more about this. It was super cool to see that. And people's feedback on how much they enjoyed it. So,
yeah. Absolutely. And we're going to definitely get into some fascia talk here in a little bit. But before we start, would you mind just taking a moment to introduce yourself and your family to the listeners?
Yes. So I'm Margaret, and I have been in the world of health, nutrition, fitness, fascia, lymph, all the things. I have a very eclectic gathering of interests. It's hard to pin down, you know, one thing. I kind of have a multifaceted approach, but I've been in that world really since I was in my late teens. I was homeschooled. I had a lot of time to pursue my interests, things that I was interested in. And that included, you know, being outside, doing some herb stuff, being on the farm. And then I gradually got into pursuing more functional nutrition training, which led to personal trainer certification and lymphatic work, and then fascia as well. So I kind of got into all of that over the course of a few years, and then had my kids, which was a whole different, you know, whole different ball game, and a lot of huge learning experiences. Still is, you know, my oldest is 5, and then my youngest is 3. So I'm very much still in that stage of, continuing to learn and have them shape me, you know, into the mom that I've become over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So far,
it seems like there's no end in sight of that with me. I think you might be finding the same.
Yes. I'm just like every time I'm like, oh, I think I've figured it out, and then they switch or something changes. And I guess that's just, you know, again, the beauty of some of this too is like being able to flow through those changes and be able to be resilient and able to, you know, get through challenges, changes. And yeah, and that's kind of cool with the work that I do, is really helping women be able to feel that way, be able to feel empowered to make decisions that they need to do, make changes where they need to make changes. And yeah, I just have that education and knowledge to be able to apply it to their life, to give them the power back, to be able to, you know, like even for clients I work with, I'm like, my goal is for you to not need me, to where you're answering your own questions. And you've got a good gist of what's going on with you, what's going on with your child. So, yeah. So I really like to try to facilitate that, kind of giving that back. So
that's amazing, because that is, life isn't going to change. Like our children are developmentally going to be changing over time. Good. That's right. That they should be. So for us to be able to be in that space of resiliency and excited optimism of, oh, what's the next change going to be? Like, oh, I'm ready for it. I'm excited for whatever it is that you're going to throw at me, because I am in a safe place. You know, I have the nutrition that I need. My hormones are functioning properly. My fascia is smooth and released, and I can do all of the things that I need to do.
Right. Yeah, and that regulated, like, and again, with the nervous system too, like that regulation, you're actually in a more grounded, regulated, equipped state to be able to handle whatever crazy things. Because as we know, every day is different, every week's different, every year's different, and you get things thrown at you where you're like, okay, then. So, yeah.
I love it. That's amazing. Okay, what a great introduction. So I know that your birthing experiences have really interplayed with what it is, of course, like all of us, but what it is that you're interested in, what it is that you teach your clients, and how you're showing up, the things that you have been learning about. So because this is at its core a storytelling podcast, I would love for us to take some time to share your experiences with birth, starting with your first pregnancy. What was that like?
Yeah, I would love to share that. I love birth stories. I remember listening to your podcast, I think, with before my son's birth, just because I love hearing other people's stories. Mm-hmm. And it was just helpful to hear a variety. And my two births are very different, like night and day. Wow. So with my first child, I'd had like 4 years of being an NTP, nutritional therapy practitioner, under my belt. I was pretty sure I knew, you know, the nutritional things I needed to focus on. And I was doing the lymphatic exercise then as well, but I didn't know about the mineral piece. So that was kind of a big area that I'm like, ooh, looking back, wish I had that knowledge that then I would have with my second pregnancy. But with her, so I got pregnant with her in, I guess it was March or April. She was doing like Christmas. She was going to be a Christmas baby. And so we were going to a practice at the time where they had midwives in the hospital, like in a birth center in the hospital. They made it sound like it was separate from the hospital. It was not.
Fancy. Spoiler alert.
We know where this is going, right? It's just so funny looking back. I'm like, I was just naive. Had no idea. I thought, oh, awesome. I get like the benefits of being in the hospital, but it's at a birth center in the hospital. No.
They do package it well though. Like, I mean, it's really.
They spell it so well. It's just like, ah. So anyway, so we went to this practice, and what's interesting is at this particular practice, it's one where, you know, kind of everyone in our area, we have a lack of good providers in our general area, the area I lived in at the time. So it was just kind of like, this is your option. You know, this is where you go. And very quickly, early on, I think really up until I was 20 weeks, I kind of had no issue. It was sort of like, okay, cool, everything looks good. Let's check, you know, do the Doppler, check their heartbeat, do the early ultrasound. And up until 20 weeks, I think everything was okay to them. But then I started having a lot of anxiety when I would go in, because I get nervous anyway in a medical setting. I just don't like it. Mm-hmm. So when I would go in for my appointment, of course, they would take my blood pressure. They would do it the wrong way, right? They're talking to me. They have the pulse oximeter on my finger that the hand, and the hand's not supported. They weren't even taking it right. I was very anxious. So they're like, oh my goodness, you know, your blood pressure is 130 over 80. Like, this is really high. You can't, you know. So they actually marked me down as like high risk perinatal hypertension or gestational hypertension. They like marked that on my file, right? This is my first baby. I look good. I feel good. Nothing seems to be going wrong, but I was just labeled, put on their little labeling list as she's high risk. Mm-hmm. And not to mention they would take it later and it would be normal. And at home I was taking it and it was normal. So that started me like on their little conveyor belt of you're high risk. So that led to more ultrasounds. It led to me. I mean, I literally in that pregnancy from probably week 24 on, I cried almost every day because they were stressing me out so much. Ugh. That's how bad it was. I was like, so, I mean, every time they call, oh, you had, you know, we're worried about this, so we need you to come in for another ultrasound. It was just this conveyor belt of intervention, stress on me. I was so stressed. And it really makes me sad looking back, because that was like my first pregnancy, and it's kind of sabotaged by this. You know, they're not looking at any of my other parameters. They're not even looking at my blood work, which looks great. My liver and kidneys are fine. I don't have any other symptoms that would make me think I have gestational hypertension. So anyway, that just really bothered me that I couldn't prove myself. I would come in with my, you know, my logs from home where it was low normal, because mine is lower in pregnancy when it's out of pregnancy, and all my logs were low normal. They didn't care. Nope, they didn't care.
And what's so frustrating, I feel like, about that is that, so you're saying they are then stressing you out. So it's this cyclical issue. Yes. Where like, you're stressing me out. Now my blood pressure is rising. Yes. Because you are freaking me. Yes. Out. Like, yes. Oh my. Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah. And then if it was even like this one particular nurse that I didn't like, and if the doctor was in the room, it was high, and then they go out and it was fine. And they're like, I'm like, no, it's because I don't like you. Sorry. I don't like you. So, and you know, so anyway, so I was just stressed that whole pregnancy. And it makes me sad too, because even in my kids today, like the difference between their temperament, like I know I was stressed so much during my pregnancy with my daughter, and then my sons, as we'll talk about, completely different story, but it's literally affects, you know, their temperament and their nervous system, like to this day, like mm-hmm. noticeably different. Yeah. And of course, I've been able to help her a lot with CFT, with minerals, with all this stuff. Like, she's improved so much, but it's just like, wow, that really does, you know, I don't know if they have studies on that, but actually I think they do. There's a book that's about childhood stress and the cortisol and the mom affecting the baby. Maybe it does. So anyway, so I was on that stress ball, just a stress ball that entire last half of my pregnancy. And it was frustrating for my husband as well, because he's sitting here watching me be pathologized. I mean, at one point, okay, they told me, if you don't go on blood pressure medication, your baby is going to die. Like, they told me
that.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this is absurd. And I wish looking back, I'd maybe gotten out, but I just was like, well, this is my only option. I don't have any other options. I don't know of any other options. So I'm just going to keep going and hope that I can have as good a birth as possible. So fast forward to the birth, which I ended up, so it was 3 weeks before she was due. I went in for an appointment. They were like, you know, oh, your blood pressure still looks kind of high. We need to go monitor you at the hospital. And so I was by myself and I didn't know what to do. I was just like, oh, okay, I guess I should do what they're saying, right? Because my husband wasn't with me and he had been accompanying me to all the appointments as my safe person. Mm-hmm. And my sane like person in the room that I know he wasn't going to take advantage of me or do something to me like they were doing. So I went over to the hospital, was monitored. I later found out that they didn't feed me or give me any water or anything. I later found out the reason why they did that was because they were prepping me for like they were going to do a C-section.
What?
at 37 weeks, no other pathology, no other symptoms. Like, and they were like, are you having any swelling? Are you having any, like, seeing stars? Are you having anything? Zero. I had absolutely no symptomology. And I knew, like, and after this, I became the preeclampsia gestational hypertension. Like, I went deep down the rabbit hole after my pregnancy with her. But I, at the time, like, I knew enough to be like, my, you know, my creatinine looks good. My kidney labs look fine. What's, like, they even ran labs that day. And because the labs look good, they let me go home. Right.
That was sweet of them. That was so nice of them.
So nice.
To let you not have your baby early. Like, wow.
Right. I know. And so then a little while after that, I had another where I came in and they were like, you know, the midwife came in and she's like, hey, you know, we, and by we, it means the other people too, because of course I didn't realize that most midwives, they are beholden to the, you know, the way their practice works. The other OBs in the practice are looking at me like, we don't like, you know, that her blood pressure's this when it's in our office. So we are going to have to risk her out or induce her early. So I agreed to be induced early with her, right? So I went in the hospital for a couple days prior to that, because again, they were kind of like weighing, like, should we induce her, should or not? And of course, again, I'm having this whole narrative of your baby might die. Yep. You know, maybe she's measuring small, which then they did an ultrasound. They're like, she looks good for her, like, good for her age. I'm like, okay, now if I had poor blood flow to my placenta and high blood pressure, why am I here? And I just remember feeling like I was in prison, because I couldn't leave, because she actually came in at one point and she was like, so we're going to plan the induction starting on Sunday. You know, it's for your safety, you know, for their safety and everything. And she was like, and then, you know, the thing that just got me, I'm looking back, I'm like, wow. She said, and I know that you guys, you know, you could leave, but I know that you guys wouldn't do that, right? Like, I know that you wouldn't go AMA. Oh, and we're like, oh, sure. No.
I'm like, no, of course not.
So anyway, that just, something set off their alarm bells. They're like, we need to induce. And I'm like, okay, well, I can still try to make this a good birth experience or whatever. So I ended up being induced. And that birth was very interesting, because it was definitely a situation where I had the induction. It took it a while, like the whole day I was on Pitocin. Nothing happened. Really nothing changed, you know, no effacement change or anything by the end of the day. And I was like exhausted. I ate a burger and fries from a local restaurant that my father-in-law brought me, and was just like, okay, we'll try again. You know, we'll try again the next day. So next day, again, they put me back on Pitocin. They kind of gradually ramp it up. And I distinctly remember I was sitting on one of their little exercise balls. My mom was in the room. I think my husband was too. And I was sitting there, and all of a sudden I felt this click, like the baby was engaging, like she was engaging. I felt a click and it went from 0 to 100, like boom. And I was just like, ah, you know, I started the moaning and like everything. And it just went from 0 to 100. And so, and my water didn't break, but I just felt that. And it gets crazier. And this, yeah, I'll try to sum it up concisely.
No, you're great. This is great.
So I felt that click. I was like, oh my gosh. And my mom's like, whoa, okay. You know, my mom has had, just for context, my mom has had 8 babies. She never had any meds at all. And she was, and they're all in the hospital. No meds, no season, no nothing. And she'd been on Pitocin for some of them. No meds. I'm like, okay. Cause Pitocin is a beast. It is very, very rough. There was no breaks. Cause I've been reading all my little books like, oh, there's breaks between contractions and you can rest. I was literally, to my husband, I was like, those stupid books were wrong. There are no breaks in here at all. And I was just like, this is horrible. So I'm being pummeled, you know, by these contractions. I'm trying to lay her on the toilet. My midwife comes in, checks me, and is like, okay, you're like a 3 or 4. And I was just like, I'm done. Like, I can't do this anymore. So she checks me and then is like, well, you know, we could do epidural to, like, you know, help with the pain, because I know it's, I mean, they had my Pitocin on the highest level. Okay. Like highest level that they could go. So I'm being pumped to the brim with the Pitocin, being pummeled back to back by contractions. And she did come back I think it was an hour later. She came back. She convinced me to get the epidural, right? So she convinced me to get it. I'm sitting there on the bed, hunched over, right? They didn't check me. Okay, here's the thing. They didn't check me before they gave me the epidural. So you know what's going to happen, right?
They love, I feel like it's like this funny little game where it's like, we're not going to check you before the epidural, but we will check you right after and you will be complete. Like,
and that's exactly what happened. So I'm sitting there, right? I'm sitting there hunched over. I mean, it felt like I was getting hit by a truck. I mean, and even compared to my son's birth, not like no comparison in terms of the pain level. I'm having to sit still. I'm hunched over. And so the anesthesiologist comes in. He gives me he sets it up, gets all that in there. And then I am like, I can't do this anymore. I'm saying all the transition phrases. No one picks it up. And by the way, my midwife was back across the street at her practice because she was like, oh, it's going to be a while. This is your first baby. But she didn't know. Like, my mom's family history is she goes to like 5 or 6, and then it's like 10 done, babies out very quickly. So as it turns out, I have that as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm hunched over, and I was like, and I'm like, you know, just very dramatic. And they're all like, I'm sure like, she's got a while to go. Why is she being so dramatic? And then I'm like, I feel like I need to poop. And they're like, the whole room just freezes. And the anesthesiologist is like, pieces out. He's just like, he's gone. And he left so fast. He left his drugs on like my bedside table. He was so like, I've got to piece out. So I'm like, I feel like I need to poop. I feel a rectal pressure. And her head's almost out, right? And I look down and I'm like, oh, okay. The epidural is not even kicked in yet at all. So I lay on my back. Another OB comes in because my midwife's not even there, right? This other OB who I did not like at all, she was the worst of those bullying people, comes in, is like, okay, you're putting on her gloves. All right, well, you know, let's get ready to go. Thankfully, my midwife, you know, hightailed from her place, came over, you know, was able to deliver her. But it was like a couple pushes and she was out. And I remember it was just, again, that like, oh my gosh, there's this baby here. This is crazy. And the epidural kicked in like right after, like probably, again, judging from my son's birth, probably midway through when she was coming out. Just like, really? Great. So that kicked in. I was laying there numb for like 2 hours. So anyway, I'm sitting there. You know, she's born and she looks great, good Apgars and everything. Very good size. She was 6'8" and she was like almost 3 weeks early, close to it. So she was a decent size for her age, was healthy and everything, just small for, you know, I was like, well, she feels small because all my siblings are like 8, 9 pounds. So I'm laying there, help like two hours. I'm just, you know, incapacitated. And it really made me mad that they took her and put her on the warmer. They're like, oh, she's too cold. So they took her and put her on the warmer. And of course, I can't get her. I'm like laid out. And I just, that's like the saddest part of that whole thing is me being like incapacitated, me looking over at her like intently, like, there's my baby. I'm looking at her. I want her over here, but I guess I could communicate that. But I guess maybe she's cold and she needs to stay over there. It's just this mental gymnastics of that. So yeah, so that was like a rough, and I didn't tear at all, which was great because I was on my back, all the silliness with that. So, but yeah, but that was her whole thing. And I remember on the way home, because we were there for a day or two, she passed all her tests and everything, hearing tests and everything. I mean, it was a girl. We did find out. We did know that. And so I remember on my way home, it was the first time I'd been out of the hospital in a week because I was in the hospital for a couple days leading up. And I remember walking into CVS to get, I don't remember what I was getting. Maybe I was getting pads or something because I was just not prepared because she was early. And so I was just like, ugh. So I remember walking in there and I was looking around at all the people in there. I was like, every single person in the store was born, like was given birth to by their mother. And I was just like, all these women, if they had kids, they went through birth. Like maybe it was not as, you know, as mine was, but I was just, it just this light bulb moment of, wow, like everybody goes through this. And I was like, why was mine so pathologized? Like everyone goes through this. So yeah, so that was her birth. And it was definitely, I mean, it definitely made me, the reason I'm actually really grateful for that experience because it helped me realize that, you know, that's the reason why you need to speak up. I could have said, you know what? We're not doing this. I'm not at risk. She's not at risk. This is ridiculous. And I could have left, but I didn't. And so I know that had I not had that experience, I would not be able to then go on to have the experience I did, which was at home and very much an autonomous type of situation. I needed that to, you know, you can't know the lesson until you've learned the lesson. So yep. For me, I'm like, and then even for my midwife, like she, in the situation, I know she was being pressured too to do something about me. So I'm kind of like, she made the best of a bad situation. I could have had a C-section. They very easily could have just wheeled me back. So in a way, I kind of had that. At least I had, you know, vaginal birth. I didn't have any major complications that I could have had it been one of these other people. So anyway, that's kind of her story. It's just wild.
Yeah. It really, and one of the things that I find really interesting is that idea of, especially with your first, that uncertainty of what am I allowed to do as this child's mother? Like, am I allowed to say no? Am I allowed to stand up for myself? Am I allowed to stand up for my baby? And that uncertainty and how, I mean, that is the crux of motherhood, mm-hmm. right? Is really stepping into that role and living that out and being this confident leader and being able to say no way. And, you know, it's not happening. And yet there's not a lot of training on that. You know, there's not a lot of training on that type of preparation. And then we get into a situation, especially gosh, in the hospital system where it's the exact opposite. They don't want you to feel that way. They don't want you to stand up for yourself or your baby because that's a pain. And how so many mothers, unlike you, it seems like with you, that lesson was, oh, I'm not going to do that again. Like, no, that is never happening ever again. I will never be in that position. But for so many other people, it can be the exact opposite. It's a training ground of, oh, I don't question things. Oh, somebody else knows better. Oh, you know, this person can take care of my baby. This warmer can warm my baby better than my body. Like, you know, these crazy things. I'm so grateful to see in your situation where it was like, yeah, no, that is not happening ever again.
It really taught me all of that. And I think too, that it even bleeds into or flows into like being a parent, like for the first time. Because of course, again, as first time mom, I'm like, oh, what do? I don't know. And then with my second, it was more like, I know what we're doing. We're doing this. And I'm going to do this with him right now because I feel like it. I don't need someone telling me when the baby does this, you do this. It's that intuition that you have to play it to. And I think that if your birth is more of that regimented, I'm just doing what they're telling me to, it's going to translate to a lack of confidence in, I mean, it decimates your ability to feel confident as a new mom, which is kind of what happened to me. Because exactly. I mean, I had tons of siblings. I'm the oldest of 8 kids. Right. And then I have my own and I'm like, how do I do this again? I don't know. So yeah.
Oh man. Wow. Okay. So that was such a learning experience for you. So then let's talk about this next birthing experience. You said, so you've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. So we're 2 years later. What was that? Mm-hmm. Well, what was that pregnancy like?
Yeah. So I found out that I was pregnant with him when my daughter, she was only 10 or 11 months old, which was quick. I was not planning. And that was the first ovulation I had after I had her. It was just like, boom, boom. He's ready to come into the world. No, and that's his personality for sure. So he was just like, boom, I'm here. And of course, when I found out, I was terrified because I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have the exact same. I'm not ready to be pressured and poked and prodded and all. I was like, I'm not letting that happen. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm not letting that happen. But I'm scared because that might happen again. And that like terrified me to be like, I mean, I literally got into a minor car accident the day that I found out I was pregnant with him because I was driving. I had to go to the grocery store and I was just like so in my head and so, and like, you know, backed into this guy. And I was just, you know, like, I'm so sorry. And in my mind, I'm like, it's because I'm just so, I'm excited, but I'm also really nervous. Mm-hmm. And so I breastfed her. I was both, you know, growing one and breastfeeding one. I ended up breastfeeding her through the second trimester because she was still little. I wanted her to still get that. But yeah, but it's just surreal. You know, you're looking at your like 10-month-old. You're like, okay, have another one coming. All right. So morning sickness with a 10-month-old was really fun. We just kind of laid in the bed and ate popsicles all day. That's sort of what we did, which was nice. I had the flexibility to do that. Mm-hmm. But so in my early part of my pregnancy, I started researching. I actually found, I just found, I just, in our area, the way it is it's like Once you find one person who's either had a home birth, knows someone who has a home birth, you find the network. Yep. And you're like, oh my goodness, there's a guy in, you know, because I live in North Carolina, there's a guy in Asheville who delivers breech babies at home.
Dr. Hayes.
Dr. Hayes, who's super cool. And he actually, we saw him for one of my, I'll get into that too, but one of my later appointment things. He did a little brief ultrasound for us. But yeah, so it just, he actually had, so the girl I worked with was a girl who he like was his, she was, or he was her backup rather. Mm. So in our state, that's kind of how it works is if you have someone who has an OB that's their backup, then that's, you know, good to go. So I found her and I was again, so nervous because I'm like, how is this going to be? And literally from the first appointment, I just felt this total peace from her and this complete, like, you know, tell me more about that. You know, she wanted to hear about how I'd been treated, you know, with her and what went wrong, what went right, what I liked, what I didn't like. Yeah. And it was amazing. And she even like with blood pressure, cause I was told her, I was like, this is my biggest thing I'm stressed about. Cause she did in home, like I would go to her house, for the appointments. And I told her like, that's my biggest stressor because I get stressed now. It's this reaction. I can't control it. I just have this nervous system response to there's a person here and they're going to tell me my baby's going to die if this number isn't right. So it better be right. And so I remember she did take my blood pressure one time and it was actually better than it had been at the, you know, again, surprise, surprise. And right. She was like, you know, people, she said, I've worked with moms just like you where they've been bullied, harassed. And she said, eventually you'll get comfortable with me and we'll be like, all right, cool. We, you know, I know that you're not gonna, I don't know, panic on me or throw me under the bus for something. So anyway, it was really a reassuring. And she was just the polar opposite. It was just the polar opposite of my entire other experience. With him, with my daughter, I had all the ultrasounds. With him, I had one at 20 weeks, just like anatomy scan, which interestingly, as I'll talk about, made me be like, do I even want to do these? This is just dumb because they had something where, oh, we need to look at this again more in depth. And it ended up not being a problem at all, but it scared me for a few weeks.
Yep.
So, but I just remember that early pregnancy being so cool because I was becoming more aware again. I was studying things, becoming more aware of, with minerals too, like the importance of making sure I'm eating enough, make sure I'm getting enough protein, making sure I'm getting enough minerals. Like, cause I'd been working on that shortly after my daughter was born. I started getting into that. And then when I got pregnant with him, I was like, it's time to really focus on this. So I made sure to get the right minerals. I made sure to get, you know, enough protein when I could, when I was feeling okay. Cause in the first trimester, it's hard. So I made sure to kind of really support that. And I also was reading about like blood pressure, at least physiologically, why you can have higher blood pressure. There's actually reasons for that. You know, of course, nervous system and stress is a different thing. But if you actually were having where it's like you are at home and you're not stressed and it's still high, like I actually dug deep and found out reasons for that, the physiological reasons. So I felt empowered to be like, I know that I'm doing what I can do for that anyway, even though I know mine is most likely related to stress, I still know that there's a mechanism at play. And it made me feel good about having that knowledge to be able to use that in the pregnancy with him. Mm. So yeah. And then with him also, so we had the appointments with her. I literally, again, it was just crazy because it was so hands-off in a way compared to what the other experience had been. I mean, it's like, I don't even think we checked for, you know, with the fetoscope till he was like 16, 17 weeks, you know, I was pregnant with him. So it was just very like calm, homey, and yeah, very relational midwife experience instead of like a clinical experience. It was very like, how are you doing today? Yeah. How have you been feeling? You know, what have you been thinking about? Or, you know, just stuff like that. And even like, I could feel, I was just more comfortable with touching my belly. I don't know, the first time I think I was just scared that I was going to like hurt her. So, I mean, I would feel around and I could even feel, you know, as the uterus is growing up, that's how I knew I was progressing because of course it was very, I didn't even meet with her until I was 10 weeks or 12 weeks. It was just cool to feel that like this very special, like this is just me and my baby. And I'm seeing that they're growing because I can feel my uterus. I can feel it is growing and I know something's happening in there. So it was just a very special experience, polar opposite. I felt more empowered to, you know, have that ability to know the things that I can do, control the variables that I can control for any risk that I might be nervous about. And then of course I would take my blood pressure at home as well, just to again, reassure myself like, hey, it's okay. Like this is a perfectly normal blood pressure. So, but yeah, her care and the way she was just so supportive was just amazing. She couldn't have been a better fit for me after all of that the first time. Yeah. So we had that 20 week ultrasound at an independent, it was just like at a freestanding independent ultrasound place, and it went fine. I was actually convinced that I was having twins up to that point because he was just bit, like, he just either had a lot of fluid or he was just a big boy. He was bigger than my daughter, but I mean, I was literally convinced. Of course, I didn't have an ultrasound until 20. So I'm thinking that whole time I'm like, I'm measuring 4 weeks ahead or 5 weeks ahead. I mean, you know, so I go in there and we're like, okay, it's just one in there. Whoo, you know, and we didn't find out. We left it a surprise. So again, a difference from before. We want it to be a surprise, which I love surprises like that. So we wanted that. But anyway, we had the ultrasound and I got a call from the midwife and she was like, hey, so I looked at the results and she said, this tech is saying that they didn't visualize the stomach. So they didn't see the stomach. And of course, in my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And she said, but this doesn't make sense because you have good fluid and he is peeing out the fluid and digesting it. And that's what's making the fluid. So if you had low fluid, maybe it would be a concern. But she said, if you want to, you know, David Hayes, he can do a quick little ultrasound just to confirm, okay, there's the stomach and you're good. Just to confirm that. Cause for whatever reason, this tech could not see it. So we made a trip to see. So that was a long week. Of course, I'm like, oh no. And in my mind, again, those little loops of like, oh, see, it was going too well. I knew something was going to be wrong. You know, all those little tracks in my brain. Yep. And then we went to him. He was so great. He was just like, these radiologists these days, they just don't know what the, and he got it there like 5 seconds. He gets the Doppler in and we went to his office. He's just the best. We went in there. He's like, yep, there it is right there. See it? It's full. There it's emptying. Oh, look, the baby's yawning right there. Look, the baby's yawning right there. So the cool thing about that was I did get to see him yawn, like yawn in utero. That was super cool. So it was just like this little baby yawn. We got to confirm he had a stomach, which is silly, but which still. Which is
great.
So silly. And I just was reminded, I was like, okay, so yeah. So they could literally say something like that, get you stressed out, and then it's nothing. So it kind of was like, interesting little note there. So don't know what we do in future for that, but that was just another little like reminder that even some of the helpful things may be causing more stress. Mm-hmm. So with him, of course, with my daughter, I've been induced. I had a very chill the rest of that pregnancy. I felt really good. I didn't have, and with my daughter too, I didn't have any swelling or water retention or like uncomfortableness. Same thing with him. No problem. I was going strong up until literally the day I had him. I felt really good. I really didn't have any major back pain or anything like that. I was going to a Webster chiropractor just to make sure everything was aligned. The ligaments were good. So I really enjoyed, working with him and having that throughout the process. I did a lot of kind of stuff for the fascia to make sure he had enough room because I would feel for his position. So I'd be like, okay, I think he's here. And then I go to her and she's like, yep, his back's right here. His head's right there. That's like the great spot for him. Oh, and also forgot to mention something else, that at about week 20, I started doing a hypnobirthing program. And that, for someone like me, who's a stress ball, traumatized from the time before, helping me have this time where it was just like, let it all go, relax, training my brain to be like, hey, brain, it's okay. This is not an emergency. These sensations are good. This is helping your baby be born. Like kind of reprogramming that. Mm-hmm. I would do that every evening. And then I used some of those techniques in labor with him. And it was amazing from my previous experience. And so that was a helpful tool for me because it helped me retrain and kind of reframe that. And I literally could feel, you know, changes in how I was thinking about the upcoming birth. Because we were going to do it at home. We had a little tub ready. I got everything. I loved getting all my supplies, getting my little affirmation banner thing up. And it was just really special because it was my space. I was like, this is my house. This is my stuff. And this is my room that I'm going to have this baby in. And it's going to be great. You know, I was just excited about it. I was like, I know my body can do this. And then I had these thoughts like, am I going to go into labor on my own? How late am I going to go? Like all these little thoughts. But I ended up going into labor with him. I was 40 weeks and 5 days. So not too bad. Just kind of a couple days after. He was a July baby. So, and actually my family had been planning to go to the beach like a few days after that. So they were happy that he came before us. They could get to see him and everything. But the rest of them were away. So that started out, I actually had an appointment that day at 40 weeks and 5 days for an acupuncture appointment. And it's funny because I was kind of doing the acupuncture appointment as like, okay, it's not going to be an induction thing, but if things are ripe and ready, it's going to help my hormones be able to support this.
Right.
So I went in and had the treatment. But as I was driving in, I started getting contractions and I was like, yeah, I've had Braxton Hicks. This is fine. This is fine. I don't think this is anything. So they're like 8 minutes apart, 10 minutes apart. I'm like, okay, interesting. So I got in there and I mentioned to her, like, I'm having a few, contractions or whatever. And she's like, okay, cool. She took my pulse. She did some things. She did the moxibustion on the needles on my ankles. I love acupuncture. And so I was laying there on the table and again, I'm still having contractions. They're like maybe 7 minutes apart-ish. And I'm laying in there for 20 minutes. So I'm like having multiple sets of this. And what's super crazy is while I was laying there, the needles, I had these needles like near my ankle for like the uterus point. And when I would get the contraction, it would like throb the needles. And like, I could feel it all the way in the needles. I was like, whoa, I think this is help. Like it's helping stimulate.
Right. The uterus. This is making this very potent.
Oh man, I was like, "Woo, we don't, you know how they'll do the electro stimulation." I was like, "We don't need any of that. I've got full electricity going through these right now." So I'm kind of like laying there a little panicking a little bit and I'm like, "Okay, great. Thank you." And so headed out, got in my car, and I drove home. Now they're like 5 minutes apart. I'm sitting in traffic and I'm like, "Oh no. I probably should get home. Maybe this is, maybe this isn't. I don't know." So I get home, my husband's sister, my daughter's aunt was watching her. I mentioned to her, I was like, hey, you might need to be keep her for a little bit longer. I'm not sure what's going on. I called my husband at work. He worked at the time like 45 minutes away. So I like alerted him like, hey, this is like 5 o'clock. It's like, hey, I think something's happening. And it's so funny. The entire last half of my pregnancy, he'd been texting me like, is anything going on? How are you feeling? Are you good? And then today I'm like, hey, I think I might actually be in early labor. He's like, I'm going to work for another 20 or 30 minutes and then I'll be on my way. And I was just like, how ironic. Like, you've been waiting for this from 35, 37 weeks. And now here I am. And you're like, I'm just going to finish up with a couple more
perfect
things.
Babe. See you soon. I'm going to go ahead and run some errands.
Sounds good. Have a great afternoon. So I texted him that and then got inside, kind of got stuff ready. And what's really funny is I had my headphones on and I had this playlist for like early labor where it was more of a, I don't know, I had all these kind of like pump up songs like you listen to before workout. I had like Eye of the Tiger on and all this stuff. And I'm like literally walking around the house and I'm like, I've got this. This is great. This, I think this is happening, but I'm going to get all psyched up. So I had my little music playlist and I'm like speed cleaning, kind of going around, getting stuff done, kind of like not paying attention to it, trying not to. But yeah, I just distinctly remember like having AC/DC in my headphones, like trying to get in the zone. Cause it felt like I'm going into this battle and I'm going to come out on the other end and it's going to be great. So it was cause I grew up doing competitive swimming, competitive sports. So I was kind of already had that side to me. So I just kind of decided to tap into that a little bit before birth. So they continue to be closer. They were like 5-4 minutes apart and lasting about a minute. And, my husband got home. He started getting my daughter ready for bed and feeding her and everything. Then I had some bloody show and I was like, we're on. This is actually happening. I had read about that and I didn't see that with my daughter because she was induced. So I was like, yes, okay, this is really happening. And the adrenaline burst I got with that was just like, oh, this is actually happening. So, and that was maybe 6:30 or 7. He was born at 3 a.m. So that was, was coming up on it. Mm-hmm. So we, I progressed. I kind of waited as long as possible to call the midwife because I wanted to kind of have that time to, I didn't want to waste her time either if it was not anything. But I remember I was kind of on the couch. I would be on the exercise ball. I kind of switched to my more calming, like the music I'd listened to during the hypnobirthing. And they had this, key word that you were trained so that your body would relax when you say the key word. That worked. I would use that. And just like, I've got to let go, not click. Cause again, that's my default is like, if I hurt, I'm like, oh, so I had to just like surrender it out. And I remember when my daughter was going to bed, he was putting her to bed. And I just remember being so sad. Cause I was like, this is the last time that I'm going to see you and you're my only baby and you're my oldest child. Like, you know, and this is the last time I'm going to say, I was just like, oh, my heart. But I think that did kind of help me to be like, okay, now it's real. Like, you said goodnight to her, time to go at it. We did have my mom come just so she could be around. And then around, I think it was around 11 that I had a contraction while I was laying down. And I was like, I think it's time to call her. They were like 3 minutes apart. I was like, I think it's time to call her. That was like really, that was the most intense one I've had so far. So we called her. She showed up, quietly got all her gear in there. She just kind of checked on me like, hey, you know, how you doing? How you feeling? I think she checked his position and all that and was like, he looks great. And he was in a perfect position. He was like on the left side, head down, the right, you know, tummy to, or back to my tummy, like that good position. Yeah. And so she just, it was just so handsome. She was just like, awesome. Great. You know, I might check his heart tones in a little while, but I'm just going to make some tea. I'll be in here. So she's literally knitting in the living room, chatting with my mom. And they're having a nice time. And I'm back in the closet, in the dark closet, like, you know, letting things happen and, you know, really letting things go. Because I realized, like, okay, there's that phase where you're dilating. I was like, I'm in the that little, you know, muscles around the baby's head, the cervix, just let that open up. And I would visualize, like, it's opening up. I'm just letting it do that. And then we'll come to the next phase when we come to it. Because I have this bad habit in life of being like, I'm going to think ahead and worry about that. And I was like, no, we're here now. We're thinking about letting this go. We're letting the baby's head come down. We're visualizing all that. And then I forget what time it was. I think it was about 2 a.m. when we started filling up the pool. So she came around 11:45. We started filling up the pool around 2 because I was getting a little mean. Like, my husband would come in and give me a fruit snack, which I had picked out, by the way. It was a good quality, high quality kind. And he's like, you know, here's your fruit snack. Do you want to try? I was like, that's disgusting. Get it away from me. I can't believe
it. Why would you ever, ever think that I would ever want that?
Yeah. Give me the thing that I bought for me to have in labor. Like, how dare you? So I did have some water. Like, I tried to stay hydrated, but it was definitely that they were coming more like, you know, at that time, like 2 minutes apart, like for a minute. And, you know, then I had some back-to-back ones. I was like, okay. So filled up the pool in there. It was a horse trough, however many gallon horse trough that was like rubber. And it was very like grippy. You could grip it really well. And we had a liner in there. We had that in our room. So they filled that up while I was in the other room. And I tell you what, the water, like at the end, oh, it was so good. It was just the right temperature. It helped me kind of get out of my head and like scene change, like, okay. And I actually have a picture in the water because I was still not scared. I was not overwhelmed. I was still like in it. And, you know, I really didn't get nervous until like 10 minutes before he came out. But it was really that whole time I was just like, I'm good. I'm here. And I have a picture of myself in the pool. I think my husband took it in the pool with like the twinkle lights in the background. And it's like 30 minutes before he was born. And I'm like smiling and laughing like in between, you know, I was able to let go in between, which is just, I just was like, this is so different from last time. So different. I mean, and she would come in and check on me, but she was not like right there, like, okay, when are you going? You know, she was just present, but not overbearing, which is just what I needed. So anyway, at one point, probably an hour before he was born, I threw up and was like, awesome transition. Cause I started to feel like, I don't know if I can keep doing this. And I knew, okay, this is what happened last time. And it was not too long. It was like a half hour before he was born. So think you can do it. And they got very intense. Like those last few, whoo boy, I remember just, I might probably squeeze my husband's hand in half because I was just like, this is like a freight train is coming through. Yeah. And it wasn't as painful as the Pitocin for sure, but it was just like, this is like an out of body experience with like the intensity of the downward, you know, the downward pressure. And then I think I yelled out that I felt something like my bottom was hurting or something, like ran. I don't remember exactly what I said. And the midwife kind of came in. She like kind of like came in and like at the door and she's like right there. And then she was like, you know, you can check yourself if you want. I don't need to get over there and check you. You can check yourself. And I was just like, what planet are we on? I didn't even think about that. So I checked myself and I could feel the bag of waters there. And I was like, he's coming out. And she's like, yeah, Yeah, yes. I was like, great. So I ended up, I checked and then I was like, okay, I know I'm getting fairly close. Like his backwaters is like right there. So I had a few more come through. And then I just distinctly remember, like, of all that, I really remember the part right before he came out, because I had my hand on the edge of the pool and I was like in a half kneeling position. And I was like, I just like screamed. I got real grunty and kind of loud. I was not very quiet. I was just like, I feel something coming out. And his head, I mean, his head popped out. And then my water broke. So my water did not break until his head popped out.
Wow.
So his head popped out. That was the most intense, crazy. I mean, and your listeners know what that feels like when it's like, I was just gripping the side, like, I don't know if I can do this. And then my mom, the midwife, I get emotionally mad at the other assistant midwife. They were like, you've got this. You're doing it. And they're like over there at the door. You know, my midwife is closer, but they're like, you're doing this. You're doing it. You've got it. And his head's right there. Next contraction, whole body's out. And of course, in my mind, when he, you know, before his head came out, I'm thinking, I have like another hour, 2 hours. I have no idea how long. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, this is going to take so long. It's just like next contraction, boom, he's out. Midwife helped him get on my chest. And I have a picture of that. And my face, I'm just like, this actually happened? Like, he's out? He's here? What? It was just the most surreal, crazy thing to be like, I did this. And I was like, I did it. I did it. My mom's like, you did it. They're all just, everybody's like, you did it. You did it. It's just so crazy that he came out. I was thinking ahead, like, oh, I've got a long time. I was like, you don't know how long you have. He could be here in 2 seconds. And he was. So yeah. And I didn't even check to see if it was a boy or a girl till like 30 minutes later. And I had the whole pregnancy been like, what is he going to be? I was just so like on that oxytocin high that I was like, I think, and my mom's standing there like, okay, when's she gonna? And I finally looked and I'm like, I think that's the cord. And then I was like, oh, it's a boy. And I wanted a boy. Like, I really did. But I didn't let myself. I was like, I'm just probably going to be a girl. But I really wanted a boy. So it was so special. And he was a big boy. He was like 8 pounds 3, which is fairly big for me. But he was a very happy little guy, like super chill baby, very, you know, very easy to deal with. He just had this temperament that I think reflected my experience during pregnancy, which is very chill. And I just remember, you know, I was in the pool, didn't really even have a lot of bleed. Like, my bleeding was great. Like, didn't even look too bad. I did have one small tear, which I did opt for like a small stitch for it, but I didn't have no other issues. I mean, I thought after he came out that fast, where it's like head, next contraction, body, I was like, I don't even want to know what happened down there. Like, I was just convinced. I was like, it's a train wreck. And she was like, well, you just got like a 1 degree, like, and if you can stitch it or not, whatever. Which she did, and I asked her to. But I just remember laying in the bed with him because my mom made scrambled eggs. I'm like laying in my bed with him, and I was just like, this is it. And I looked at my husband. I was like, I can't wait to do this again sometime. He's like, let's give it a little time. Let's give it a little time. You don't need to, you know, not right away. He was just like, I was just like, this is the best. Yeah. And, you know, it was just such a good experience. And then, you know, my daughter wakes up the next morning. I have a video of her coming in to see him. It was just the cutest thing. She's just like, you know, mommy had her baby last night. You know, here's the baby. It was just like, oh, so sweet. And she loves them. They're best friends to this day. I mean, they fight some too, but they're very good buddies. They always play together. And yeah, it was just so special. And again, completely different. And then she came to visit, you know, of course, a couple days later, periodically to support postpartum, which was wonderful. Just have somebody to be like, hey, is this normal? Hey, is that normal? Where's the hospital? It's like, you're there for a little bit, and then it's like, goodbye, we'll see you later.
Figure it out.
Yeah, like no help beyond that. And then it's like, she was just very, very present, there to help. And so overall, it was just such an amazing experience, and I loved it so much. I remember even a couple days later, again, I was probably on like the hormones, whatever hormones I had going on, the oxygen, I was just on that high for like a couple months, and that carried me through the, oh man, I think he has a tongue tie. Let's do some body work. Let's go to the crane. You know, like carried me through all those little like hiccups and things, that confidence of, I was like, I did this. I can do that. I can do that. It made me feel like I could do anything actually. Yep. Which I felt like, you know, I don't know. I felt like that at other times in my life, but it really made me be like, I can do this. Like I can do these challenges. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but it was just such a good experience. And that really made me realize, like, again, the power of being able to be like, making your choices, knowing what you had happened before, and being able to make a different choice and be like, no, actually, we're going to try this. Both my husband and I were like, we're never doing that any other way. Like, when we have more babies, hopefully, we're like, we don't want to do it another way. Cause it was just, he just even was like, this is amazing. This is so great.
I think it's just so empowering for both of you as a couple. Yes, as a mother to bring forth this life, but also as your husband standing there, number one, witnessing you doing it, but being such an integral part of all of it. It does. It just provides this layer of comfort of like, oh, look what we did. Like, oh,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, everything else will work out. Like we did that thing. Like it's going to be great.
And just telling people, I mean, I know I was probably super annoying to everyone, but literally everyone I saw, I'm like, I had a birth at home. It was great. And of course, the rest of the family is like, I'm the only one, like, I think in most of his family, because at the time we were living on an apartment that was on his family's property, mm-hmm. like an upstairs apartment. And I think I'm the only one who's had a baby in the house, probably ever will. But it was just like a house blessing. Like, that's mm-hmm. where I had my baby. I just think about it fondly. I'm like, I just loved telling everybody, my husband's mom, my mother-in-law, you know, coming in like, oh, this is so great. You know,
you're amazing. I had him right here.
Yes. And I actually have a picture of several months after the spot that he was born, the light mm-hmm. through the window. It actually was shining on that exact spot. I was like, I need to take a picture. I still have a picture. It made this like little cross from the window. I don't know if it was just a fluke, but I was like, huh, that's very interesting. Like that exact spot.
That's beautiful. Oh man, I love things like that. That's so special.
It was really cool.
Gosh. Well, and it just is so clear. Just, I mean, birth is so transformative for mothers. Mm-hmm. Like it just, it changes our trajectory so often. It redefines what's important to us and what it is that we want to work for, what it is that we're passionate about. And you, Margaret, like you said, are passionate about a number of things, but they all come together so cohesively for the support of humans. But specifically, I know you generally work with mothers, correct? Or women?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. That's my primary group. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I'm curious for us to talk about some of these kind of interests that you have. They're so related and so applicable to pregnancy, to giving birth, to postpartum and regaining our strength afterwards. So is it okay if we talk a little bit about, there are a few little topics, but I want to talk about mineral balance and nutrition to kind of start us off. Why is that so important in all of these phases of childbearing?
Yeah. And it is so important for a number of reasons, but one of the main things is that we, you know, we're giving a deposit. Moms make their first deposit of minerals into their bodies, you know, if you think about a bank analogy, they make their first deposit into baby's, you know, stores of minerals during pregnancy. So you're kind of almost giving them a little bit of a, again, head start in life. So you're passing some of those minerals. And minerals are so important for really everything in the body, really anything that requires an enzyme reaction. So digestion, hormone, making hormones, thyroid health, immune function, detoxification, all of those require nutrient catalysts to be able to function properly. So if you have, you know, if you have less minerals available, you're going to have less minerals available to perform those tasks. So it's so important for the mom. And then of course you're passing that on to the baby. And it's estimated there's a doctor, I think Robert Thompson is his name. And he first came up with a statistic that you actually lose around 10%, 4 to 5 pounds of minerals per baby per pregnancy. And that's not counting breastfeeding. I actually learned, this was just the other day, I was doing some research on breastfeeding and mineral loss, because we hear about that in pregnancy. Some of your listeners may have heard that too, 10% of your mineral stores per pregnancy. But they actually found that women who were breastfeeding per, you know, time period of breastfeeding, which in the study, it was around 12 months, women will lose anywhere from 2 to 5% of their total bone density. So you're actually losing those from the bones. They're being put into the bloodstream to be utilized. You're making breast milk, so you're requiring minerals like sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, even zinc, selenium, all of those, you're actually, you know, requiring more of those in your diet so that then you can pass that on to the baby as well. So yeah, so it is important, because if you have a depletion of those minerals, any body system or body function that those minerals are responsible for will not work as well. So you can have more fatigue. You can have thyroid and adrenal problems. You can have hormonal imbalances that can affect during pregnancy or even after pregnancy as well. And even with milk supply too, back to breastfeeding, there's some interesting research on that, but there, you know, obviously each quart of milk or however much they measure in studies is going to have like an appreciable amount of minerals like potassium, like calcium, like magnesium, some sodium, and other nutrients that are going to be present, not even to mention the fatty acids that are there too. Right. So just so many raw materials are needed to do all of those different things as well. So they're definitely very important. And I didn't really know a lot about that until after my daughter was born. And I was like, oh, I'm depleted because I went my whole life with these factors that were depleting me. Like, you know, I lived in a house growing up that had mold in it that I didn't know that can cause mineral loss. I had so much stress. I was not eating enough. I was working out 5 days a week on 1500 calories and trying to eat low carb while doing all of that. So it's like I had this history of like stress depletion, not really understanding how to apply that information. And then after my daughter, I was kind of like, oh, I'm going to start doing some of this because this makes a lot of sense for, you know, if we want to have another baby, I want to, you know, put the materials back that I've lost basically and probably have had lost for quite a while. Right. So yeah.
Gosh. Yeah. That is so interesting. And one thing that I will say that I actually I gleaned from you when we were at the CFT conference, but I had really been putting a lot of emphasis on magnesium throughout my pregnancy, which critical, so important. Yeah. But I was still experiencing a little bit of fatigue and I was doing adrenal cocktails, but we were talking about potassium. It was somebody else you were speaking with, but it was talking about potassium. And I was like, I wonder if I need a little bit more potassium. And I started adding in additional potassium to my adrenal cocktails, and my fatigue, like the lingering amounts that I had, just boosted so quickly. So it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how helpful something so seemingly insignificant. No, they're the building blocks. They're critical.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And potassium was one, like, it's my favorite. Like, honestly, people will be like, you're potassium biased. You only like that. I'm like, well, I just see a lot of tests where it's really depleted and people are having those symptoms of fatigue. They're having muscle weakness. They're having headaches, constipation, slow gut motility, thyroid problems. And so, yeah, I see a lot of that. And it is one that's so crucial. And it's one that's interesting because that potassium pairs with sodium and that creates that sodium potassium ratio. And that's what every single cell has to have, a balance of those two to be able to move waste out, to bring nutrients and to be able to utilize those two minerals well, and to be able to really perform all the functions that cells do, because cells do everything. And yeah, and we have to have a good balance of that. And so sometimes I'll see people, so for example, with salt, I feel like salt's having a comeback and I'm like, yes, it's about time. And really the only time that you can have problems with salt is if potassium's not balanced. And that's when people will experience where they do feel like they're getting a little water retention around their ankles, or they feel like that when they add salt, their face gets puffy. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes adding in potassium is the way that they're able to fix that, because potassium helps to balance that osmotic pressure that's holding the fluids in the cells and in the tissues. So yeah, so it's just, and those two in pregnancy are especially critical. In fact, there's research that indicates that by trimester, your need for salt goes up. And sometimes women will have more cravings for salt later. And I'm always like, go for it. There's a reason why you're craving salt. It's because you cannot have, you know, good baby's growth will not be as good. The blood volume will not be built as well if you don't have that sodium, which controls that, you know, the osmotic pressure in the bloodstream and the ability of the cells to utilize nutrients. So it's just so crucial. And yeah, people have been told to, you know, be afraid of it, especially in pregnancy. Oh my goodness, salt in pregnancy. It's so many times people are like, oh, they told me to be on no salt. I'm like, that's the worst thing that you can do for like someone who maybe has issue with swelling or blood pressure. Like, that's one of the worst things we can do, is just cut all the salt out, because you have to have that. And sea salt, of course, which is the kind that I recommend, it's not, you know, it's got other minerals in it besides just salt. And if you use a really good salt, you're getting magnesium, you're getting trace minerals like zinc and selenium, you're getting some iodine, you're getting boron, you're getting magnesium, you're getting all these different minerals, and even potassium too. You're getting those in that complex. So it's really more of like a mini mineral complex rather than just sodium. Like table salt, sure. Like I can get it where people are like, eh, it's not so good, because it is strips of all those. But when you can get those, yeah, with those, all those mineral sources there, it's just tremendously beneficial and easy to add in as well. Like you said, adrenal cocktails, adding into drinks. Yeah, it makes it really convenient.
It's the best. That's so incredible. And it's so frustrating, the narrative. There's so many narratives, I feel like, that have to be combated. And the fact that like salt is bad, I do feel like you said, it's making its comeback, baby. It's the next butter.
Yes.
Like, it's, but there's still a lot around that. And to be able to feel comfortable and confident of, no, I'm doing the right thing. I am increasing my salt, and that is okay. That is a good thing for me to be doing. I think that could be helpful for moms to hear. So very good. Yes, now, for sure. The next thing that I want to talk about, well, there are two things. I want us to talk a little bit about the fascia and lymph.
Yes.
And so how these things are related to our pregnancy in particular, and what can we do to help these systems, but what are they doing to help us as well, if that makes sense?
Yes. Two of my other favorite topics.
Right.
This is just like, again, I have these little areas that I really like. And it's cool because in a way it all kind of works together, because with the minerals, they help us stay hydrated. And if we're well hydrated, things like our fascia and our lymphatic system, they can flow better and have better, the fascia can have more mobility, and then the lymph can flow better too if we're better hydrated. So that's kind of like the top of the pyramid. And then you have the lymph and the fascia. So with the lymphatic system, it is, you know, for those who are not familiar, it is the system in the body that helps us manage different processes like immune system. It's actually kind of considered part of the immune system. There's organs that connect to the lymphatic system, but it helps us escort out waste, and it helps us bring white blood cells, you know, basically cleans that out and then brings white blood cells back into the areas of the body that need that for support. So it's kind of our body's garbage disposal system. And as you can imagine, if you had a garbage disposal in your sink that you never actually emptied or, you know, cleaned out, it's going to be pretty gross if you don't flush that through. So that's why moving lymph is so important. And we can move lymph by movement, and we can move it in specific sequences. We can do certain stretching modalities for it to help it flow. You can even do self-massage with it. But in pregnancy, I found that the lymphatic system is so crucial for a couple different areas. One is in the first trimester with nausea. So with nausea, vomiting, you know, not feeling very well, sometimes that can be, I mean, it can be connected to many different things. It's hormones, it's the liver, it's, you know, blood sugar, all of these different things, nutrients. But with the lymphatic system, oftentimes if the liver is kind of struggling or it's kind of stagnant, it, you know, the lymphatic system will be too. So moving the lymph is a very non-invasive, supportive way to help your body help itself in terms of getting out the toxins without doing anything. Again, people, when we say get out toxins, people think we're doing these crazy detox protocols and parasite cleanses. It's like, no, this is your body's own system that's designed to get rid of waste and you know, move things out. And it's even responsible in pregnancy too and out of pregnancy, but it actually takes the fat-soluble vitamins that we're consuming, so A, D, E, and K. When we're eating those, it's actually moved from the lymph to the liver. So we absorb it, and then it's moved there, and then that's how the liver gets access to those fat-soluble vitamins. So there's some connections there. But for nausea, I found that, you know, if someone can do something very simple, like dry brushing, doing the move that I teach called primary back stretch, just doing something very simple that hits some of those big areas in the body that are the areas of stagnation in the lymphatic system, then oftentimes they can feel better after that, because they're mobilizing and moving that through. It's not very high effort. It's not too taxing, but it helps their body continue to clean that out, because we're going to be moving, you know, old hormones through there. We're going to be moving toxins. We're going to be moving metabolic waste through. And so it's just supporting that natural flow. So I found that that's a very helpful tool throughout the whole pregnancy, but especially in the first trimester. And then later on in pregnancy, the lymphatic system is going to help with inflammation in general, because we know, you know, the body's inflammation, the way it deals with that is going to change in pregnancy. But sometimes we can have, you know, again, we can have swelling, we can have water retention, our face can feel puffy, you can feel puffy under our neck. And so sometimes that's a sign that, you know, obviously minerals play a role with swelling and puffiness. But in this case, when we can actually move lymph, and it's safe to do that in pregnancy, by the way, I get people all the time, like, is it safe for me to move lymph and do these, you know, these gentle modalities for it? It absolutely is. It's basically like supercharging your body's own innate built-in system to deal with that. So, you know, again, doing the dry brushing, doing, because I teach a method of lymphatic exercise that helps target those biggest areas of stagnation along the spine, armpits, the neck, the groin, back of the knees. So we kind of hit those areas and it helps just drain that system. So it helps you feel more comfortable. It can help decrease that inflammation, or just feeling kind of puffy and inflamed, how you kind of will, you know, will get towards the end. It can help really balance that out and just help you feel more comfortable as mm-hmm. well. And I'm all about that. Like, if we can help people feel better and feel less uncomfortable and have a more pleasant pregnancy, then that's what I'm all about. Because I want people to be able to have the tools to do that. So
that's huge. One of the things that I will say, so I have done some of your T-taps for pregnancy.
Yes.
What I found so interesting was it actually exposed some of the inflammation that I didn't realize that I had, if that makes sense. Like, as I was going through the exercises, I was like, oh, I do feel inflammation in my hands right now. And now I'm shaking it out and it feels better. And it was just such a really cool, like, connection, because if I hadn't been doing those movements, maybe I wouldn't have noticed it, but it was still there. And then to, like, kind of pull it out and then allow it to cycle through was such a cool experience.
Yeah, exactly. It makes you more aware of those areas and what to do about it. Cause that's the empowering thing, when you're like, I feel like this is kind of swollen or inflamed. I know what to do for it, or I can mm-hmm. support it in that way. So yeah, so it's very supportive of, like, yeah, of helping that too. Now with the fascia, so we have lymph, which is that fluid flow system. So they actually know that the lymph flows through the fascia to get where it needs to go. Mm-hmm. So you have those lymph nodes, those lymph vessels, but you're going to have some fluid flow through the fascia. And fascia, of course, is this connective tissue that goes head to toe. It's totally interconnected. Every single individual muscle fiber is encased in fascia, and it just extends from the cells all the way out to the external surface of the skin. So it's just totally interconnected. I like to think of it as a giant spider web. If you pull on the web in one spot, it's going to affect and change and distort the whole rest of the web. So, it's interesting because that flows through. So if you have stagnation, if your fascia, you know, it's supposed to slide and glide. So if it's not able to do that, it's going to have, you're going to have more tension. You're going to have more inflammation. You're going to have an area that feels stuck and just feels uncomfortable. And of course, in pregnancy, we have more relaxin, which is going to make us more mobile and a little bit more loose. And so the fascia is something that, you know, you can have issues with, you know, because the muscles, of course, have fascia in them as well. So you can have a muscle imbalance that it may not necessarily be the muscle. It may just be that the fascia there is not able to move and flow as it should. And you can have inflammation. You can have pain from that. But also interesting in pregnancy is that the actual, and this is an area I really like to talk about too, was that in pregnancy, the belly, the abdomen, you have a ton of fascia there. Nobody likes to talk about that. But like, if you look at a diagram of a, like, even a cadaver model where they have, like, this is this huge, thick, giant sheet. I mean, if you think about it, if you've ever seen, like, C-sections, how many layers they have to cut through to get to where the baby is. Like, there's so much there. And so it would follow that a lot of those ligaments, a lot of those connective tissues that are there, that as the belly grows, and if you have any compensations, so if your right hip's higher and your left shoulder's higher, you know, the baby is basically trying to find the best position that's most comfortable for them. So if we have something in, you know, that's out of place or out of balance, the baby's going to be like, I'm not going to get in that ideal position. I'm going to be upside down, transverse, sideways with my leg out, because that feels better to me.
Right.
So it's really creating, and this is something too that's cool, is that you can facilitate and create space in the, you know, in the womb space and in that outer area where all the fascia, all those ligaments, because there's so many ligaments that connect to the uterus, that go down from the uterus, that are part of the, you know, the pelvic diaphragm, like all this stuff. And it's just when you can fix some imbalances there and you can create more space for the baby, they will be more likely to want to be in a certain position. And mm-hmm. I actually had after my son, I went to a Arvigo abdominal worker where she does the massage of the uterus, all the connected tissue there. And she could actually tell from feeling where my babies were positioned during pregnancy. And my son was a year and a half old. And wow. I was like, how? And she's like, okay, so your daughter, you know, both of them seem to be like this. And I mean, she could feel that in my tissue. My tissue was actually telling her this is where they were, because she could feel, again, the muscle tone was different on one side. I had more muscle tone on the other. And it was just so cool because your body has this memory, again, the fascia memory, where it remembers where it's there and remembers where the baby was. Mm-hmm. And I learned this more in my second pregnancy, because in my first, I was scared to touch my belly. I was scared to do anything that I didn't want to hurt anything, or, you know, and with my sons, I got a little more bold. I was like, I'm going to do some of these exercises that help open up that space and help give him room and help, you know, get my rib to hip, like getting that really long so that he has plenty of space in there. And so I actually then also had a couple friends who were pregnant at the time, and I was learning all this, and I'm like, you know, picture me, like, I got a whiteboard, I'm like explaining all this. And then one of them's like, yeah, actually my midwife told me that my baby's breech, so I'm not really sure what we're going to do. And I was like, well, let's go ahead and do some stuff to, you know, I had to do some lunges. We did some side bends. We did some psoas lengthening. 2 days later, she texted me. She's like, I went back and he's head down. And I was like, really? Supporting space and making space. Did that. And then I had another one a couple months after that. Same thing. I already had it written down, like what we did last time. So I have no idea if that's replicatable for more than two people, but it was just cool to be like, wow, this actually makes a difference. And maybe, again, I'm of the opinion that if the baby is not comfortable with being in that position, they know it's not a safe position for them to be in, they just won't. Exactly. But sometimes babies like, oh, her psoas is actually not bowstring tight anymore, and the hips more open. I'm going to go ahead and move over there because I have space to. Because from their vantage point, they're just trying to figure out where is most comfortable. They know they've been in there for 9 months. They know what the landscape is and what it looks like, and also how to get out. So it's just like providing that space. So the fascia is really, yeah, so important for that too, the baby's positioning and how they present even, and becoming comfortable with that and knowing again, oh, he feels like he's more on my right side. Just for fun, let's see if I lay on this side and move my leg up, if I can give him more space there mm-hmm. to move. So
So my third was actually breech at 35 weeks, which was surprising to me. I wasn't expecting it. But I remember before I was also in denial about it. I was so in denial that the baby was breech because that didn't make any sense to me. But I did know, like, oh, this baby is trying to move positions. I can feel that he or she wants to move positions. And I was like, I was talking to the baby and like, what do you need from me? Like, what, how can I help you get into the right position? Because I feel like you're trying to do something. And so then we did find out that the baby was breech, and I was like, it's my psoas. I really feel like both of my psoas are just too tight. And so I started doing some psoas stretches along with the other. I was doing bowspring. I was doing a lot of things to like provide length, but I think the psoas really, really. I lengthened my psoas muscles, and then I did get on an ironing board. diagonally. Had my husband hold my ankle. It flipped the baby flipped, and then since then has been in the most beautiful position. So it is so amazing, cool. Just providing the space that they need. And sometimes it does take a little, like it takes that intuitive, like, okay, what do you need? What are you asking for? And trying to follow up with that and figure out what that is exactly. But just providing that space. That's so incredible.
Yeah, that's so cool. It's just amazing that what a little thing like that, like the psoas is huge. Like even the Webster guy that I go see, he does some psoas releases where it actually feels like you're like, I feel like you're on my uterus, but he's not. He's just, again, releasing that whole psoas. And I remember with my son, I was like, whoa, I had no idea that was that tight. Like you just never realize until you're aware of it. And then you're like, oh, that's it.
There we go.
So muscles like that, you know, where you can, you know, just simple things where you're able to, like you said, with the ironing board, laying the leg, it, you know, if you have a bed where it's, you know, high enough, just laying your leg off. I love doing that. I do that now where you lay on the edge, you have your leg off the bed and you make sure your back's not arching up. You kind of keep it neutral so that you can get that nice length in the front of the leg. And it's just amazing for supporting all those things.
Well,
too.
Now that I have my massage table for CFT, it's like perfect. Actually, something I wanted to talk about too, just to touch on, was this idea of going from womb to world. And so let's say, I mean, even if we give our baby as much space as possible during our pregnancy, it is still a tight space. Like, admittedly, it's tight. And so once they're here, they've got their own fascial system. They've got their own fascial memories of being inside of the womb. And so from the two of us having gone through CFT, you took the infant course training as well. I'm curious to hear what you've been experiencing and what you've been seeing working with some infants with CFT.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I'd love to talk about this. I love talking about the stories about what I see, because it's just like, this is amazing, you know? So I've had a couple babies. It's so funny. I feel like, I don't know, it was just meant to be where I end up having a mom, hey, you know, I heard that you took this class, or Holly told me, you know, I'm a patient of Holly's and she's out of town and, you know, can you work with my baby? And so I've had probably 4 or 5 babies that I've worked with since I got back. And every single one, I just leave and I'm like, that was amazing. Mm-hmm. And so interestingly, I had one baby where he had been like a stalled out, like at birth, you know, he had been one of those, like it was stalled. He wasn't wanting to come through. I don't remember if she had a C-section or not, but he actually got into this position that was ostensibly the position that he may have been stalled in. And he had a huge release on this one side of his head, because he had one eye that was a little bit smaller than the other, you know, where it's like noticeable. And I felt, you know, I had my hand on his head, had my hand on the forehead. And literally after that, I'm looking at his face and I'm like, it's more symmetrical. How did that happen? Like the web, you know, again, the fascial web, he had been, if you think about it, he'd been pressed, you know, in the canal, birth canal for, I don't know how long on that. She said he was, whatever it's asynclitic or whatever it's called, where the head step. So he was at that side angle. And she said he wanted to do this and he wouldn't nurse on, you know, the one side that was too tight, he wouldn't nurse. And so she was like, maybe he doesn't like the breast on that side. And I was like, or it's uncomfortable for him to do that. Yep. So that was a pretty remarkable one. And then I also had, I've had two babies where I got to work on a baby who was like 5 days old. I was just like, oh, this is so good. So he's just little tiny squish. So I was actually working with him and two babies did this. They literally replicated the position that they were born in. And the mom was watching and she was like, hey, I'm going to go look back at the midwife notes, but I'm pretty sure that's the way he came out, you know. And she mentioned, oh, his shoulders were a little sticky or something, so he was there for a little bit longer than he should have been. But you know how, like, if you ever seen a video of like babies being born where they kind of have that little rotation that they do, both of them were doing that, but I was supporting their pelvis underneath their head, and they were just, it's like they were going back in that position to get rid of the tension that they accumulated in it. It was amazing. And then I also was able to work with a baby who was adopted. And she was, or actually not adopted, it was a foster baby. One of my favorite cases where foster baby, the mom had literally just gotten care of the baby 4 days before the baby shower that we were both attending. I mean, totally divinely orchestrated. I was at the shower, she was at the shower. And she was like, hey, you know, I know you had the training, you know, would you want to work with her? So I had two sessions. I had a session that day at the baby shower. Amazing. I had an audience of probably 5 or 6 other girls that were watching. So they were like, wow. And my mom got to see, which was cool because she hadn't seen me work with any babies, although I told her about our class that we went to. It was just amazing. So much unwinding. And again, the baby had, the mom had been on some substances while she was pregnant with her. So this baby had been in the NICU, poked, prodded, all of this stuff. And what's interesting is she didn't want to be worked on when she was laying on her back. And I was like, that makes total sense. If she's been in the NICU, vulnerable, you know, poked and prodded on her back, she didn't like that. If I had her kind of holding her up, like I was supporting her with my hands, she was cool. And she did a lot of unwinding. And on the second appointment, and the mom, again, had the foster mom had said, you know, she has trouble sleeping. She has so much tightness in her diaphragm from screaming so much in the NICU. Like, you know how when you cry and that diaphragm is just like so tight, that front of the belly, it was so tight. At the end of that second session, which I did at another family member's house while they were just having dinner and I was just in the living room with her, she not only did her, is it totally released out, she just fell asleep. And again, this was the baby who, again, withdrawal baby, not happy, screaming all that. So I'm just holding her there in the living room and I'm like, this is insane. Like, all I'm doing is supporting the baby, doing what she wants to do, going with her the flow. And she's just like, she was just like this, like completely fell asleep. And I was just like, this is amazing.
This is beautiful.
This is absolutely amazing. And the mom had even said, she was like, I think this might be the best experience that she's ever had in her life so far, because she's had so much trauma. And then to have someone who's just like supporting quietly and letting her unwind the trauma of being born and then being put in the NICU and all of that. So that was just such an amazing experience. And I was glad to get to work with her twice and see the changes. Because that's the thing with CFT is people think, I mean, I've had results for people with one session, right? Where they'll notice some things after one session. That second session, she was like, wow, we've had the best nights since we got her, since that last session. Like, big things happen. So sometimes it's that cumulative effect of, again, letting the fascia unwind, because it's going to do what it wants to do. We just have to support that process. Yeah. But it's amazing. And I often think of, like, I wish that all of us at birth had access. I wish that every hospital, every team of midwives, like, had somebody on staff who does it, because that would be just so amazing to have these babies get that start in life, because those patterns, as we know, they continue into adulthood. So I know when I was a baby, I had torticollis, like where I had one side, and to this day, my left shoulder wants to come up here. And if I get nervous, it starts to creep up and then my head goes that way. And then I, you know, get neck tension. So yeah, just being able to get that, like, not, it's kind of nip it in the bud, like get it right away. Let's go ahead and facilitate that. And for parents too, and even I was talking to one of the moms I was working with, I was like, this is amazing tool for you to be able to have for your own kids. Because again, like we were talking earlier about the intuition, like mom's intuition, being able to have your child, like for example, with my kids, if they hit their head, I'm like, come over here.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and do a little bit.
Take care of it now.
Because we know that that can impact, you know, the brain cycle, which is the respiration rate of the brain and the cerebrospinal fluid. So, you know, being a parent and having that intuition and be able to be like, I'm going to work on here and then I'm going to go here. Just knowing that, again, you already have that connection with your child, and it makes it so special if you're able to be able to come into their bubble and support them in whatever way they need. So, but it's just been so amazing. And I'm so glad that I took the infant class, because I almost was just like, I mean, I know some babies around, but you know, I kind of even was like, why? I don't know. I mean, this is not part necessarily of my business per se. I kind of just do it as an enjoyable for fun thing. And I'm so glad I did, because it was just amazing. I was like, this is, why doesn't everybody know about this?
I know. Please, everybody know about this. Please.
Yes, it's so good. You don't have to have, and that's something too that one of the moms at the class was saying, is she was like, I wish that, for it was her fourth baby that was at the class being a demo baby. And she was like, I wished I knew at, you know, my first baby, my second baby, that, like, you know, sure, there's aspects of having a baby that are just going to be, you know, ever present. They're going to get fussy. They're going to have trouble sleeping, all this stuff. But if I'd known, she was like, if I'd known that I could proactively support, you know, my baby and actually remove the restrictions or things that are making them uncomfortable and making them, you know, feel more, you know, more fussy. Like if I could just remove those barriers, because she was talking about how much results she'd seen with her baby from just one session. He had a great night's sleep. She was just like, why didn't I know about this at the beginning? And then, you know, it might not have been, because that's sometimes people get scared, like, oh, I'm having another baby. I don't know. Like, I remember how bad that one was or how horrible that experience was, or birth experience even. It's like, you don't have to repeat that again. Like, you can make a different choice. You can learn new things. You can implement new things that you've learned or new practices. So.
I love it. Margaret, this has been such a blast. You are a wealth of knowledge. It's also just so amazing to hear your own birth stories and see, just hear, you know, how you have transformed as a woman and as a mother. And I know that just bleeds into how you support others. It's just so incredible. Thank you so much for coming on the Happy Home Birth Podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was so much fun. I don't think I've ever been able to share both stories, like, you know, on a platform. So I'm so glad to have this, because it's special for me to be able to talk about it, because I love birth stories too.
Oh, I'm thrilled about that. Also, actually, I'm glad that you just said that, because I want others to be able to follow you and know where they can find out more about you, about what it is that you're offering and what you do. So can you share where people can find you and find the things that you provide?
Yes, for sure. So I'm most active on Instagram right now, and my handle there is _musclesandmotherhood, just spelled out. And I have links there to my classes, because I do have the TTAP classes. I have a YouTube channel that has free, like, examples and, you know, free videos to follow along with. And then I have my Minerals and Motherhood prenatal nutrition course, which talks about some of those principles that we mentioned and kind of expanding on that. And then I have a course for women that is more geared towards women who, kind of like I used to be, where they're tired of, you know, under eating and over exercising and not seeing changes to their hormones and their adrenals, that just supports that process. So that's called Metabolism Rehab. So I have kind of, those are my main things that I provide. And then I do have a small on the side business of doing HTMA mineral testing and functional lab work that I do as well. So those are kind of what I have. And I really do enjoy, again, connecting the dots for people and helping people give them the tools to help themselves. Basically, that's kind of what I like to do. So.
Love it. Thank you so much, Margaret.
Oh, thank you. This is so much fun.
How amazing is it to speak with someone who is so well-rounded in all of the systems that so deeply support our health in pregnancy, birth, and motherhood? As we head into today's episode roundup, I really just want to take a moment of gratitude for the exposure of these concepts. When we learn this kind of information, it may be the default to think, ugh, why didn't I know this before? This could have helped with X, Y, and Z. And I totally understand that, because I have certainly felt it before. But even more so, how exciting to know now. How exciting to learn about our minerals, our lymph, our fascia, our bodies, so that we can become more aware stewards, and so that we can influence our children's lives, whether they've yet to be conceived or they're already 25. This information is powerful, and we can use it with excited optimism. Okay, my friends, that's all I've got for you for today. I'll see you back here next week.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Are you looking to extend the home birth support, encouragement, and education? Join us in our Facebook group, Happy Home Birth Podcast Community, and check us out on Instagram @Happy Home Birth Podcast.